Continuing our reporting here from Exponential Med 2014 in the beautiful Del Coronado, Hotel Del here in Coronado. And I'm going to introduce you to Marty Cohn, who's a physician and the chief medical scientist of Centrion. And before that, he had a little involvement with IBM Watson. Is that correct, Marty?
That's correct. I was chief medical scientist for IBM Research, and one of my projects was IBM Watson.
So you know a little bit about the space of AI and what we're looking at there in terms of big data and the uptake on the clinical decision side. Talk a little bit about what your message was on stage today.
Well, the gut of the message is that we need to make better decisions because there's a lot of waste. Roughly, it's estimated that one-third of what's spent on healthcare in the United States is for things of no value for a variety of reasons. If we're going to approach reducing that $900 billion to $1 trillion of wasted effort, we need to make better decisions to decide when to, how to use things that we know will work, how to avoid using things that we should know won't work for a patient, and so on. The need to achieve that requires something called personalization. Instead of treating you as one of a group of patients, learn enough about you as an individual and what's available in the whole healthcare realm so that together we can make a decision that's more likely to be beneficial for you. So you may be diabetic, but that's not your only characteristic. So if I treat you like I treat every other diabetic, you know, you're probably not going to do very well, or patients, you know, other diabetics won't do well and should have a different treatment. Our goal is to learn enough about individual patients using something called big data. So if I can get access to, say, records on 1 million patients, and I can describe you with many characteristics. You're diabetic, you also have congestive heart failure, you're of Asian descent, you worked in a coal mine. Create a cohort of patients that are very similar to you. I can get real world data about what makes this group of patients that are very much like you better or worse, and use that information so you and I do a better job for your healthcare. Because there, we use the literature, the published studies and so on, but there's a real limitation on those because those are population studies based on a single disease. But we know lots of patients with chronic disease don't have a single disease, and we don't find literature on patients with multiple chronic diseases. The only way we're going to learn that is by collecting data on many, many patients, big data, look for patterns in that data that suggest to us we have some insights that we can use that will be beneficial for you as an individual, more likely to get you a good outcome, optimize your health. So that's kind of the key. But before we get there, we have to change the incentive structure, which is, it's in progress, where we will be rewarded if you do better, if you are hospitalized less, if you are healthier and more active. And so instead of being paid as a physician for everything I do, my reward will be based on how well you and I together do to keep you healthier. That's another big data challenge. But if we don't change that incentive structure and people continue to get paid on the more they do, the more they receive, rather than the better they do, okay, these tools aren't going to be very helpful. You know, we can come up with decision support that's fantastic, you know, that it really enables us to make better decisions, which are much more likely to be beneficial for you. But if I live in the system where I get paid for more, the more I do, the more I get paid, rather than the better we do, the more I get, what's my incentive to change? I'm not going to act against my economic best interest for very long. That, you know, if the incentive's out there, I'm going to chase that incentive. So a precursor to widespread distribution of effective decision support is making it, you know, worthy for people to engage in it. We've got to get there.
And this decision support, the big data analytics, the mashup into actionable information is absolutely what's required from an accountable care model as well as a population health focus, no?
It's both. So, you know, you take Don Berwick's triple aim, okay, and three components. One is improving population health, because I mean that we want everybody to be healthier, the population. Improving the patient experience, that gets down to the individual, and controlling cost. We want all three. And the accountable care model is one of the models that addresses that. In the accountable care model, an organization takes on responsibility for a group of patients for a fixed amount of money. So for them, they have the incentive now. If they keep the patient healthier and at home, the patient's happier and is more likely to stay engaged with that plan. And if they do a good job and, you know, reduce avoidable hospitalizations or acute care events, then they save money. So they achieve that triple aim.
So let me ask you, is the technology ahead of the workflow, or what's your sense of the uptake in the physician market?
They're developing simultaneously. Workflow is very important. If you have a decision support system that totally confounds the workflow and upsets everything, it's not going to be used. We're in an era now where the recognition of the limitations of the healthcare system and the waste are becoming common knowledge. One of my theories is that one of the incentives for change is that with the way health insurance is progressing, you know, 20, 30 years ago, if you had a good health insurance plan, you paid basically nothing out of pocket. Now, even with a Cadillac plan, for a family, you may spend $4,000 or $5,000 out of pocket. So even though it's a small fraction of the total healthcare cost, it's having an impact on your decision making. So the fact that insurance is changing so that it's less distorting of the marketplace, people are now aware of what things cost and they want change. So from the bottom up and the top down, there is incentive to change healthcare and make it more effective and make it more value-based and outcome-based.
So legacy medicine's under attack, but I would say the majority of the peers, perhaps in our demographic, are just trying to sort of chug along to make it to retirement. They're going to leave the shift to the younger generation.
I think that's correct. And, you know, I'm not sure that's the wrong way to go about it. I mean, I'm 68. If I happen to be a technologist, a technophile, but, you know, that's not common for my age group. And to expect somebody who has worked, you know, for 40 years in one model to all of a sudden change to another may not be realistic. But, you know, the groups coming out now, you know, have grown up with technology. You know, when my kids look at me, you know, in their schools, they were given iPads and that sort of thing. So this is the norm for them. There's also another interesting demographic change, which I think is going to help us, is a couple of years ago, for the first time, the majority of newly trained physicians went into salaried positions rather than opening their own practice. The sociologic arguments are the current group is more interested in lifestyle than making as much money as they can. So we're already there. So they're, you know, they're part of organizations that are incentives to be efficient and effective. So a real social change that I think is going to be part of the support for decision support.
And perhaps somewhat influenced by the increasing presence of women in the workforce.
I think that's a key factor too. And I think, you know, that's a very good thing. But physicians want to focus on being physicians. They'd rather not deal with the paperwork and all that sort of stuff. So to take a salaried position in exchange for more controlled hours and not having to worry about a lot of the bureaucracy is an interesting proposition.
So we shall see. So are you bullish on the future of medicine?
Yes, I am. I really am. I think we've hit a turning point. The idea of personalized medicine, of making better decisions, of the role of artificial intelligence has been around at least since the 60s. But the incentives weren't there. But now, and the technology wasn't good enough. Now the technology is powerful enough and the incentives are there. People want change. So we have these two things coming together. I think it's going to be a true sea change, and I'm very optimistic.
Yeah, I often say the change imperative was once limited to the boardrooms of healthcare system leaderships, physicians, and the like. Now the house is out of the barn because it's not just challenging companies; it's really bankrupting countries.
Exactly. So we're up to 17% or 18%, almost $3 trillion a year spent on healthcare in the United States. Every country in the world is concerned about that. Even countries that spend a relatively small fraction of their GDP on healthcare are concerned about how rapidly that number is increasing and what they're getting for it. So, yes, the incentives are there. It's reached that point now. I've been hearing for 40 years that healthcare costs are unsustainable. I think we actually may be there now, and I think that's part of the powerful incentive.
So, Marty, you want to talk a few minutes about your new venture, Centrion?
Okay. Well, with Centrion, we're approaching one of the major problems in healthcare, which is management of patients with multiple chronic diseases. This group of patients with these complex chronic diseases account for 70% of what's spent on healthcare in the United States. And a substantial fraction of that is avoidable hospital admissions. So patients like with congestive heart failure and emphysema, COPD, and so on, are frequently admitted. And one of the things that research shows is a lot of the time the patients get admitted or readmitted, and the interval, during the interval between those encounters, they've had no contact with their physician. So the opportunity to identify deterioration early and intervene to keep them healthy enough that they don't have to wind up being admitted has been missed. So that's where we work. We integrate data from home monitoring systems for patients with longitudinal health information to identify patterns that predict this particular patient is starting to deteriorate, but not yet symptomatic. It's so early in the process, but we have detected patterns through big data analytics, predictive patterns that say this patient is set up to deteriorate, notify them and their healthcare team so they can intervene with something modest to prevent that deterioration. Keep the patient at home, up here, which is where most of them want to be, and then control costs by reducing that avoidable admission. So that's where we work right now. And, you know, it's a good starting point, because ultimately we want to get into preventive healthcare. It'd be much better if I could prevent a patient from developing congestive heart failure or COPD than waiting for them to get sick and then trying to treat it. But those programs cost money. And that's another area of predictive analytics, is what kind of prevention program does this particular patient need to avoid getting congestive heart failure? But if we can reduce costs enough for the established patients that already spent 70% of our healthcare dollars, that frees up a lot of money to then be applied to preventive programs. So it's, you know, kind of a Sutton's law. This is where a major medical problem is, a major economic problem is, and that's where we work. We work with organizations like Medicare Managed Care Plans that are in this accountable care-like model. Because if they don't have that incentive, you know, if their incentive is still every admission is revenue, then they're not interested in our analytics. So we work with organizations that have accepted that dual goal of controlled cost and improved outcomes.
Well, Marty, thanks for your commitment to the space. Thanks for your tenure at IBM, and best wishes on the new venture.
Thanks very much.
I